The bakers of Slow Bake Wonder Bread and Hostess Cakes present Pretty Kitty Kelly. Michael Conway, Kitty's former sweetheart, now her lawyer, is working with might and main to prove Kitty innocent of the murder of Mademoiselle Helene Dupin. It is Michael's theory that the two foreign agents, Colonel Oruskany and Aristide Leon, are the real culprits. That the murder was only another of their schemes to prevent ratification of the treaty between the United States and the Argentine, which Kitty's fiancé brought to America. Meanwhile, the success or failure of Kitty's defense seems to hinge on the gun with which Mademoiselle Dupin was shot. The police have traced it to a gangster, Fred Luttman. But through Luttman's sweetheart, Irene Egan, Kitty and Michael have learned that Luttman sold the gun to a 6th Avenue pawnbroker named Henry Glicker. Exactly what use Mike will make of the information has yet to be learned.
Want to make your children happy? Of course you do. Then listen, I'll tell you one sure way. One of the biggest moments in a child's day is when he opens his lunchbox at noontime. He's hungry, and he's looking forward to good things to eat. So the more delicious, the more appetizing you can make his sandwiches, the more he's going to enjoy them. And now, here's how you can make your sandwiches the best ever. Simply use slow-baked Wonder Bread. For you see, Wonder Bread is better for sandwiches in four ways. First of all, Wonder Bread stays fresh. After you make your children's sandwiches, every slice of Wonder Bread will stay moist and tender right up to the moment your hungry children sail into them. And then, Wonder Bread tastes really grand, too. Its fresh-baked goodness will bring out the full flavor of your tempting sandwich filling. What's more, Wonder Bread's close-knit texture holds your filling in the center of each sandwich, stops it from leaking through onto hands and clothes. And most important of all, Wonder Bread is a splendid energy food for growing children. Besides, because it's slow-baked, Wonder Bread is quickly and more completely digestible. In fact, Wonder Bread is the one best bread you can buy for making sandwiches. And that's why your children will love Wonder Bread sandwiches. So when you prepare their lunches, make their sandwiches with slow-baked Wonder Bread. For better sandwiches tomorrow, get Wonder Bread today.
Kitty's story. Our scene is the living room of her 31st Street apartment. The time is early evening. Kitty's aunt and uncle, the Welbys, are deep in conversation. While curled up in one corner of the couch, deeply engrossed in a book, is 10-year-old Billy Wilson, Bunny's little brother. He is totally oblivious of their discussion.
Well, do you think we should do anything, Edward?
It may have been just an oversight, Phyllis. Mm. I rather fancy this week has been something of a problem for Mr. Burroughs, too.
Well, should we tell Kathleen?
Well, I think Kathleen has enough to worry about. The check may simply have been delayed. We'll wait a day or two before seeing anything.
It always arrives today, and I take it to the bank.
Well, as I say, Burroughs has his problems, too.
Edward, you don't suppose he's stopped Kathleen's salary, do you?
Well, for all our sakes, I rather hope not, Phyllis.
Mm.
I think he would have told Kathleen. Let it go for a day or two. If it hasn't come, we'll look into it then.
Oh, it'd be a terrible blow. I don't know what we'd do.
What's all that clatter about?
Hey, let me in.
I'll get it, Mr. Welby. It's funny.
Sit still, Billy. I'll let her in.
Hello, Mr. Welby. Where's Billy?
He's here.
What do you want, Bunny?
Look at here. We've been subpoenaed.
What?
Yeah, we got to appear as witnesses at Kitty's trial. The fellow has the papers, and I got one for you, too, Billy.
Sure, I know, Bunny. Mike told me I was going to be a witness.
Oh, but this is the other side. It ain't Mike Conway. These are from the district attorney's office.
Hmm.
The fellow that brought them told me. He's just up to my apartment. He left me yours, too, Billy. I told him I might as well take it.
The state? You mean the prosecution wants you to testify? But what about, Bunny?
Well, I don't know, Mr. Welby. I ain't got any idea.
I think as Kathleen's lawyer, Michael should be told about this.
Oh, I'm going to. He's coming up here. He wants to see Billy.
Oh, I'll bet you he wants to find out if I remembered that telephone number. The one that the Dupin dame called that afternoon. And I can't.
Why not? You got the Plaza part of it in three. Plaza three. Why can't you remember the rest?
Gee, Bunny, I've been trying to. I've been thinking so hard, I'm almost dizzy.
Bunny, he'll never remember it that way. It'll just come to him, or he'll never remember it at all.
I'm thinking about it even while I'm reading, Bunny.
Oh, the heck you are. You're thinking about that book. You've got your nose glued to it.
Well, one can hardly blame him, Bunny. It's one of those sex rumor thrillers. I came across it in a second-hand bookshop today and bought it for him. I'm going to read it myself. What's the name of it, Billy?
Batwing.
Ah, yes, Batwing.
And is it swell? You ought to read it too, Bunny.
I'll go on and read it.
Oh, sit down, Bunny. Is Michael going to stop in here?
Oh, I think so. Oh, jeepers, that could hardly be him already.
Hello, Johnson.
Hello, Miss Wilson.
Mr. Welby in. I'm here, Johnson. What is it? Anything wrong?
You busy, Mr. Welby?
No. What is it?
Well, a fella come just now and he gave me paper. I get it right here. Looks like law business. You tell me what it is, please, her.
Oh, you got subpoenaed, too.
Huh? What you say, Miss Wilson?
You've been subpoenaed. You have to appear in court for Kitty's trial.
Fancy Miss Wilson's right, Johnson.
Sure, Billy and me got him, too. We got to be there.
Oh, yumpin' yiminy. I don't want to go get Miss Kelly in more trouble. No, they want me to tell George about that gun.
Keep still, Billy. You just be there next Monday at 9:30, Johnson, that's all, or they'll send the paddy wagon after you.
Huh? Well, how long I got to stay here?
Oh, I guess till they've heard what you got to say. They got to pick a jury and everything, and it'll probably take a couple of weeks.
Couple of weeks? Yumpin' yiminy. What about my job here?
Well, you better tell your boss that you got to go to court so he lets you off. He has to do it, too. That's the law. Jeepers, it'll be a regular vacation for you.
A vacation? I don't know. I guess I got to get me lawyer, fella, and tell me what to do.
Ah, you don't need a lawyer. All you have to do is go to court and testify. It tells you there in the paper where to go.
Miss Wilson's right, Johnson. We're going to court on Monday. You can come along with us if you like.
Oh, sure, come with us. We're all in the same boat. Oh, maybe that's Mike now.
Well, you got company coming. Hey, go back downstairs.
Very well, Johnson.
Oh, Mr. Mack.
Hello, Billy.
Hello,
Miss Wilson.
Oh, Edward, it's Mr. Boone.
Yes, I heard, Billy.
You've been a stranger. Where you been?
We want to see Mr. and Mrs. Welby. Are they here?
Yeah, come on in.
Come in. How do you do? Sit down, both of you.
Billy, get your feet off the couch.
Okay.
Well, I suppose you're just as worried about Kathleen as we are, Mr. Bowles.
Yes, Mrs. Welby. I sincerely hope she gets out of this.
We were down to the clink trying to see her, but they wouldn't let us in. Now, Artie here figured we'd better tell you folks so that you could tip off Kitty. I'm afraid we got some kind of bad news for Kitty.
Bad news?
Yeah, I made Artie come along so he could tell you his side of it, and then I'll try to tell you what I think.
Yes, Mr. Bowles?
I didn't send Kitty her check for this last week.
Yes, we know.
I hate to do this.
Come on now, Artie. It ain't your fault. You can't help it. The whole trouble is, folks, Artie's canceling Kitty's contract.
He's what?
Yeah, now he's perfectly within his rights. There's a clause in it that says that Kitty has to be a good girl, you know.
Mr. Bowles, Kathleen hasn't done anything. You surely don't think she murdered anyone.
Mrs. Welby, I haven't had a chance to do any thinking. Between the show and the police, I don't know where I've been. It's not myself. I'm not doing this. But a show like mine requires a big investment. I've got almost $100,000 tied up in that show, and now it's a dead loss.
I see.
This business has ruined Kitty as a personality. We might all just as well admit it.
Oh, no, I don't think that's so, Ronnie.
What can you do with a Max? No reputable producer will touch anybody that's been mixed up in a murder case.
Well, if she comes out of this with clean skirts, what's the matter with her? I tell you, you're wrong, Artie. I'll sell her again. I'm only sorry that you dropped all that jack.
Mr. Burrs.
Yes, Mr. Lilly.
I want you to know that we think you've been very kind to Kathleen. You've paid her a great deal of money. And I think Kathleen would be the first to admit you've had very little return for it.
Oh, no, Mr. Lilly, no. I don't want you to get me wrong. Just having Kitty under contracts had a big publicity value. But I've got a nut of about $100,000 in this show of mine, and I was depending on Kitty to put it over. Now, it's impossible.
Yes,
I hate to take advantage of Kitty on a technicality, but I've got fellas on my back, too.
Well, there's nothing we can do about the contract, folks, but I don't want you to take Artie seriously about this trouble ruining Kitty's career. She beats this murder app and I'll get her work. And I'll sue Artie for the rest of her dough under the contract.
Oh, Mr. Metz.
Oh, Artie knows it. We talked it all over. I didn't know a darn thing about it till Artie telephones me long distance. I was up fishing in the wilderness. And I grabs me a newspaper, reads the story, and nearly have a hemorrhage. Now, what's the situation? What are you doing for the girl? You got a good lawyer?
Young Conway is defending Kathleen.
Young Conway?
Yes?
I thought she gave him the air and went for a patent leather shake, Ramon Serrano.
Oh, it's too long a story to explain, Mr. Mann.
Well, nothing's too long. That's what I'm here for, to see what I can do. Remember, that little girl is my bread and butter, too. I'm getting 10% 39 weeks now.
Well, that may be young Conway now.
Oh, I'll be doorman, Mr. Wilbur.
He's a lawyer, huh? Is he any good? She's got to have a good man, you know.
Hello, Bunny.
Oh, hello, Mike.
Oh, hello, Bunny.
Hello, Conway.
Why, well, Maxie Hart's on.
Yours truly. You know Artie Bowes, too, don't you?
Hello, Mr. Bowes.
How are you?
All right, just come over to see what I can do for Kitty. We got to get her out of this, you know. We can't spare the horses.
Well, we're going to do our best, anyhow.
Hey, listen, you got to get her off. You got to. Did she really shoot the dame?
Oh. Of course not.
Well, then it ought to be a cinch. Now, here's
Did
what
you... Did you want to see me, Mike?
Listen, little fellow, we got important things to talk about here. You go on back and read...
Wait a minute now, Maxie. Wait a minute. Billy's one of our most important witnesses. He's going to help get Kitty acquitted.
Oh, he is, he?
No.
Well, now, listen, little fella. When they ask you if Kitty did it, just say no. Say no, you understand? I'll be in the courtroom, too, see? We'll work out a system. If I hold up the right hand like this, just look at it, see? You say yes. If it's my left hand, the other one, just say no.
Wait a minute, Maxie.
What do you mean, wait? What do you mean, wait? Listen, Conway, you've got to beat this rap. Just let me hear you say once that you will.
Sure, we're going to beat it, Maxie.
Well, that's better, right?
Keep still for a minute,
well,
Maxie.
Okay.
Lansing and the FBI are still trying to run down Oreskini and Leon.
The time's getting short.
I know, but they're doing their best, Mr. Welby.
How about that pawnbroker? Get anything out of him?
No, I haven't located him yet, Mr. Welby. They say over at his shop that he's away on his vacation.
Oh.
And I called him at the place he's supposed to be, but they say they can't reach him.
Hey, wait a minute. What is all this? What's it all about?
Oreskini and Leon are a couple of foreign spies.
Uh-huh.
And I think they're responsible for the murder.
I get it.
The government's helping us run them down.
Mm.
Now, this pawnbroker's a new angle.
Yeah?
He sold the gun to whoever shot Mademoiselle Dupin.
Hey, wait a minute. This pawnbroker.
Yeah?
His name ain't Glicker. Is it an old guy?
I don't know what he looks like, but that's his name, all right.
I've been fishing with him for the last week.
Oh, you've been?
Yeah, he's up in the Catskill Mountains. And he knows about that gun, too.
What?
He can tell you all about it. He was going to tell me, but I had to catch a train, and I couldn't wait. I'm supposed to call him up. Hey, where's your phone?
Bread's the most familiar food on your table. Make it the best, too. Serve delicious slow-baked Wonder Bread with every meal. Wonder Bread is the one best bread you can buy. And the bakers of no other bread in the country can offer such convincing proof of this fact. Listen. To date, over 500,000 women have compared all good breads at their food markets. In fair, impartial tests, they've looked for the bread with the finest texture, the bread with the most appealing aroma, the bread with the most delicious flavor. And this is what's happened. 9 out of every 10 women have chosen Wonder Bread above all others. So today, see if you don't agree that Wonder Bread is the one best bread you can buy. Try a loaf of slow-baked Wonder Bread.
Will Mr. Mack's sudden appearance and his knowledge of Glicker save Kitty? To whom did the pawnbroker sell the gun that shot Mademoiselle Dupin? Tomorrow, be sure to hear the next episode in the thrilling life story of the beautiful golden-haired Irish girl, Pretty Kitty Kelly.
Daylight saving time ends Sunday, September 24th. If your community has been on standard time right along, this program will reach you 1 hour later, starting next Monday. Otherwise, tune in next week as usual. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.
We present a transcribed announcement.
Here's the story of the 1940 cars in a nutshell.
Best Bets Buick.
See your nearest Buick dealer for complete details.
WJSV, Washington.
Concentrated Super Suds in the Blue Box presents Mert and Marge. Theater and the world of life, and the story of two women who seek fame in the one and contentment in the other. Brought to you by the makers of concentrated super suds in the blue box. But first, let's listen in on the conversation.
Say, Margie, when I passed Nell's house this morning, there were several women on her back porch.
Myrtle, then today's the day Nell is proving it.
Proving what, Margie?
Proving that her old washing machine can wash clothes just as white and bright as the newer machines her neighbors own. You see, Myrtle, I introduced Nell to concentrated super suds in the blue box because she blamed her dull, dingy washes on her old washing machine. But now she knows that the lazy soap she used caused all the trouble. My, but she's proud of the washes concentrated super suds gives her. She says they're the whitest and brightest in the whole neighborhood.
Oh, I'm sure they are, because concentrated super suds is guaranteed best. Guaranteed to give better results than any make of washing machine, and for tub washing, too.
Yes, and remember, Mert, concentrated super suds in the blue box is made with Pyre, a new wonder-working soap ingredient that gives concentrated super suds far greater washing power and enables it to give you five great wash day advantages. More suds, whiter, quicker, safer washes with far less work.
And friends, surely you want whiter, brighter clothes. The kind concentrated super suds turns out every wash day, whether you use tub or washing machine. So make your next wash day the easiest and most successful ever. Use concentrated super suds in the blue box, the soap guaranteed best in tub or machine. Listen for Concentrated Super Suds Guarantee, which Dell will explain following today's program.
And Marge. Mert and Marge have returned to New York and have started work on the Miramar Theater Group project with Brellerton White. Mert, anxious to see their new work absorbing Marge's interest so that she may forget Lee Kirby, is delighted with the speed with which White has worked. But yesterday, Clarence told Marge about White's strange carelessness in paying a personal tailor's bill from the theater bank account, a bit of information which made Marge thoughtful. Today, we must go to the 49th Street Theater to find the girls. As we enter the stage door alley, we find Clarence alone and, believing himself unobserved, pacing up and down in a curious frenzy.
Perfectly ridiculous for me to feel so timid about it. There's no reason why I shouldn't ask them to give me a chance at it. I'd certainly be better than some of those hams they've been hearing. I could do it beautifully. I know I could. Bella. Bella. No matter what happens, I shall always adore you.
Well, Clarence, having a good time?
Oh, hello, Bella. Jimmy. How are you?
Not practicing up for another lecture, are you?
Oh, no, nothing like that. Just talking to myself about something.
Oh, it's a bad habit, Clarence. It indicates insanity.
Huh? Oh, no, it doesn't, Jimmy.
Well, especially when you make strange gestures.
No, that's an exploded theory.
Well, I hope you're right for your sake.
So do I.
Myrtle and Margie still inside?
Yes. Oh, yes, indeed.
What's going on?
Oh, tryouts. They're picking the rest of the cast.
Well, do you think it's okay for me to go on in?
Oh, sure. We're taking a short breathing spell at the moment, giving the next fellow a little extra time to study the scene he's to read. Go right on in.
Okay, thanks.
All right, Mother.
Oh, Myrtle.
Jimmy Kent. When did you get here?
Just this minute. Not interrupting anything, am I?
Oh, not a bit. We're almost through. Just one more actor to audition. Stick around.
I intend to. Where's Margie?
Sitting out front. Going to stay in town for dinner, Jimmy?
Oh, longer than that.
Yeah?
I told you I wasn't going to stay out in Old Port this winter, so here I am.
You didn't let any grass grow under your feet, did you? But, Jimmy, what did you do about that?
Oh, good afternoon, Kent. Glad to see you. Put it right here.
Hello, Mr. White. How are you?
Oh, here now. None of that Mr. stuff. Brelly to you, my boy. Just plain Brelly. Well, thought you'd drop in and see if your 5,000 is producing any action, did you?
Hey, Brellerton.
What's the matter?
Don't say anything about Jimmy's money. I told you that.
Oh, yes, I know. But Margie can't possibly hear us.
Somebody else might. The rest of the cast knows he's one of our backers. Margie will hear about it. Actors don't keep secrets.
Oh, well, nobody heard me. But we're getting things in fine shape, Jimmy. Yes, sir. Thanks to that check of yours, we're off to a quick start. Listen, you're not going to regret this little investment, not for a single minute.
I'm sure I won't. But I think Myrtle's right. As long as there are any others around, let's pretend I have no connection with you or the company.
Sure. But you rest assured, as a friend of Myrtle's, you're always welcome around the theater. Or should I say, as a friend of Marge's.
Okay, Brelly, let's dip it.
Oh, anytime you want to drop up to my place, just come along and see how things are going. Come right ahead. Always glad to answer any questions.
Right.
Say, wait a minute. What's Ross holding this up for anyhow? Why doesn't he tell this next guy to go ahead? I want to get out of here before 5.
You can't expect a man to read a part until he knows what the character's about, Brad.
I know, but I've got other things to do, Myrtle. I can't waste all day just hearing actors.
Now, B, there's nothing more important than casting. Better let Ken run this his own way.
Oh, I'll be tactful, Myrtle, but I crave action.
And he's going to get action regardless, eh, Myrtle?
Greatest little fellow on earth for getting things done I've ever seen. Oh, wish I had more experience in lying, Jimmy. I feel like a guilty school kid every time Margie asks about the financial setup.
Oh, I know. How is she, Myrtle? Pepped up about this now that it's actually started?
Yes, Jimmy. Not quite the way she used to be about a new show, but she will be before long, I'm sure.
Beginning to forget about Lee a little?
Well, coming back to the Sonorens Hotel didn't help any.
Yeah, I thought of that after you left the other day.
But she's found a new apartment for us and we'll be moving about the first. That'll help a lot.
Sure. And a few more days around the theater like this.
Dr. Romero was right, Jimmy. This is exactly what she needed.
Oh, Myrtle, we're ready for you.
Okay, Brellerton. Here I go, Jimmy. I've got to run through the scene again with this new fellow. Go on up with Margie, why don't you?
Okay, where is she?
She's sitting out front in the back row. Go right through that door behind the switchboard.
Right. If I join you, Margie?
Why, Jimmy, where did you come from?
Oh, I just wandered in. Thought I'd like to see how the Mermaid Theater Group's progressing.
Oh, it's progressing all right. Or was until just a few minutes ago. We've got all the cast except this one part.
Is it all right to talk here?
Oh, Jimmy, perhaps you better go out in the lobby.
Oh, sure. Well, now, we can talk all we want to out here.
Yes. Now, what are you in town for?
Oh, I'm an old New Yorker now. This is my home.
Are you serious?
It's a fact. The great metropolis just couldn't get along without me any longer.
What are you talking about?
Remember that meeting at the factory I had to go to the day you folks left Oldport?
Yes, of course.
Oh, that was an extremely important meeting for me. Changed my life completely, uprooted me and cast me forth upon the broader seas of business.
Well, come on, tell me, won't you?
Well, the management board of J.W. Kent and Company has, in its infinite wisdom, seen fit to appoint Mr. J.W. Kent II as a special sales representative for the metropolitan area. So, effective today, I'm attached to the New York sales office.
Oh, Jimmy, But, Jimmy, I didn't know you had a New York office.
Oh, absolutely. Corner of Madison Avenue and 44th Street. It hasn't had a very spectacular record of success. That's why they sent me here to sort of stir things up a bit.
Oh, putting it right up to you, are they?
Yeah. Local bear must make good if he wants to stay here. And he does.
Well, did you know they were thinking of sending you here?
Well, it's been in the wind for some time. It's an old Kent maxim, never count your chickens before they've hatched it. Very original. Been in the family for years.
Oh, you crazy. When are you moving in?
I have already. I'm now installed in a very comfortable room at the Yale Club, a permanent part of the local scenery. Oh, which brings up a point.
Yes?
Well, you may not realize it, but I'm practically a stranger here in town. So I shall need help, solace, guidance, and companionship until I know my way around.
I've been coming to New York only about twice every week since your earliest childhood. You don't know your way around at all.
Exactly. hey, look. They're all through.
Oh, well, we better go back inside.
Let me get the door for you.
Thanks. Oh, seems as though they want to give him the part, Jimmy. Ken Ross is going over to talk to him. I guess he's in.
Okay, everybody, that's all for today. Be sure to see Mr. Ross before you leave, though.
Come on, Jimmy.
All right.
Say, Margie.
Yes?
Margie, I almost forgot. I want you and Myrtle to save tonight for me. You haven't made any plans, have you?
Oh, no.
Well, she was just about to, though. She didn't know it, but she was.
Huh? Oh, that's all right, my boy. We can let you in on this, too. You see, I've got a new penthouse apartment that needs a bit of housewarming, and I'm asking all the cast up tonight.
A penthouse?
Yeah. Is it okay, Margie? Can you come up?
Well, yes, of course. Where is it?
I gave Myrtle the address a few minutes ago. Can't get a cast completed in a penthouse all in one day without doing something to celebrate, can we? Wait till you see the night view you get from my terrace. 38th floor, and the city spread out like a map.
What a man. Bing, bing, bing.
So he's moved into a penthouse apartment already.
Why do you say it that way?
Jimmy, I'm probably being very silly, but I don't like that man.
Why not?
I don't know exactly, but I don't trust him.
Well, why, Margie?
I don't know, but I'm very glad I didn't let you give him any of your money, Jimmy. He works too fast to suit me.
Isn't Jimmy wrong about Bellerton White? And is Margie right? Or is her feeling simply the result of the disillusionment Lee Kirby caused? Will she have reason to change her mind about him at the penthouse party tonight? And can White keep Mertz and Jimmy's secret from her? Don't miss tomorrow's episode. And now, Margie?
You know, friends, it's only natural for us women to envy others who have more modern conveniences than we have. The very latest washing machine, for example. But there's one consolation. Thanks to concentrated supersuds, the wash that we hang on the line will be just as white and bright as anybody's. Because, you see, concentrated supersuds in the blue box washes clothes a gleaming, brilliant white in any type of washing machine. And in tubs, too. Yes, this amazing new soap, concentrated supersuds, gives layer upon layer of rich, energetic suds. Suds that soak dirt-free in as little as 10 minutes. That's why you get cleaner, whiter clothes in less time with less work.
We're so sure concentrated super suds in the blue box is the finest soap you have ever used that we make this guarantee. Get a package and test it against any other soap. If you don't agree, concentrated super suds gives better results. Just mail the empty carton to Concentrated Super Suds, Jersey City, New Jersey. Colgate Palmolive Peat Company will send you double your money back. Well, Won't you join Mert and Marge at the same time tomorrow? Hilltop House is on the air in 30 seconds. The story of one woman's devotion to the children in her care and her fight for their happiness. Keep tuned in to Hilltop House. Helps a woman look younger when its natural brilliance is revealed by amazing Halo Shampoo. See your hair gleam with new luster and allure, for Halo Shampoo gives youthful sparkle and manageability even to dry hair with no scalp irritation. Hair gains lustrous radiance without use of lemon or vinegar rinse because Halo's rich lather contains no soap. Buy Halo Shampoo, H-A-L-O, in generous 10-cent or larger economical sizes at any cosmetic counter. Daylight saving time ends Sunday, September 24th. If your community has been on standard time right along, this program will reach you 1 hour later, starting next Monday. Otherwise, tune in next week as usual. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.
9:30... WJSB, Washington. Palm Olive's Hilltop House, dedicated to the women of America. The story of a woman who must choose between love and the career of raising other women's children. Presented by Palm Olive, the beauty soap made with gentle olive oil, and starring Bess Johnson.
Tell me, are you always beautifully fresh, immaculately dainty, when your husband comes home for dinner? I hope you are. Remember, your husband works hard all day. He's tired and exhausted when he reaches home. Then, if you find you looking sweet and fresh and dainty, it makes home seem like heaven. But if you're careless, if you let perspiration spoil your attractiveness, you can't expect him to feel quite the same way about home. So, be a wise wife. Tonight and every night, take just a few minutes for a Palm Olive beauty bath. Just draw your warm water, slip off your clothes, step into that tub and relax. Let the fresh water and Palm Olive's rich, creamy lather touch and soothe every part of your body. Then cleanse your skin very thoroughly with Palm Olive. A quick rinse, step out, pat yourself dry, then just see how fresh and clean you are. How soft and smooth and lovely all your skin looks. For you see, Palm Olive helps your skin look lovelier because Palm Olive is a true beauty soap. It gets its lovely, fresh green color because it's made with olive and palm oils, nature's finest beauty aids. And naturally, that makes Palm Olive's lather really different, extra kind and gentle to your skin. That's why Palm Olive cleanses thoroughly and yet so gently that it helps keep your skin softer, smoother, more alive with beauty. So begin to take Palm Olive beauty baths this very night.
And now for our story of Hilltop House. Though Captain John Barry's sister-in-law, Gwen, has been in Glendale for only a few days, her presence has caused a noticeable change in John. He has become moody and restless, and Bess can't help seeing how disturbed he is. But John has steadfastly refused to tell Bess anything about his sister-in-law. We know he hates the woman, holds her responsible for his brother's death. Despite the fact that Gwen married his brother, we know that she was once in love with John. But it's evening now, and our scene is at Hilltop House. Bess is in the living room with John. And in the study, we find the Adair twins. Jean is engrossed in a book and doesn't hear Jerry as he calls.
Jean? Hey, Toots!
Hmm? What is it?
Did you take down the history notes?
What?
What's that book you're studying so hard?
What? So what do you want, Jerry?
You're not studying.
What's that book?
That's entirely my own concern. Now, what was it you wanted to know about the history notes?
Let me see that book.
Give it back to me. Give it back this minute, Jerry.
Uh-huh, another love story.
You put that book down, Jerry Adair.
How can you read this? It's nothing but silly mush.
I want that book. It belongs to me.
Well, don't brag about it. I got a peek at the last one you were reading.
Would you give it to me?
It was full of Angela, my love. Open up your heart to me.
Jerry!
And this one...
It was not. Now, will you stop acting like an infant?
Look at who's talking. If I'm an infant, don't forget we're twins, and that makes you an infant, too.
I don't care to get into a discussion with you. Now, will you give me back that book, please?
Yeah, after I've read a little of it. He looked into her limpid blue eyes. Woo!
Jerry, if you don't give me that book this very minute, I'll tell Miss Bess. That's what I'll do.
Oh, no, you won't. You wouldn't dare tell Miss Bess you were reading this kind of junk.
You'll be sorry, Jerry Adair. I'll never forgive you for doing this to me. I'll never help you with your French again.
Well, I don't care what you're doing.
You try again. That's all you just wait.
Gee. What's going on in here?
Miss Bess, will you please make Jerry give me back my book? He snatched it right out of my hand.
It's one of those mushy love stories.
I don't care what kind of a book it is. It's Jean's, and you have no right to snatch it from her. Now give it back, please.
All right.
You were teasing Jean because she was reading a love story?
Well, she's always reading them.
I am not.
Come here, Jerry.
Yes?
Jerry, I've always found that people ridicule things they don't understand. And from time to time, I've heard you poking fun at the mere mention of the word love. I know it's because you're a little too young to understand it.
But Jean's the same age as me.
The girls are a lot older for their age than boys.
Well, Jean, you might say girls are a little more emotionally mature than boys at the same age.
But great golly, Miss Bess, does Jean have to read these silly love stories?
They're not silly. This is just a romantic novel. It's Graustark.
Well, I read that a long time ago and enjoyed it.
You didn't, Miss Bess.
Sure I did. You know, Jerry, one day you'll find yourself in love.
Well, not me. None of that stuff for me.
Oh, no? What about Suzanne Gray?
What's she got to do with this?
Well, twins, the subject of love is something we could go on talking about for days and days. I want you to think about this, Jerry. Love is the greatest and finest emotion that can come into anyone's life. Without it, life can be very empty. If you love someone very deeply, it can change your whole outlook on life. Love should be a sacred thing, Jerry. And that's why I don't like to see you poking fun at it.
Gee. Gosh, I wasn't poking fun at it. I was just teasing Jean about the love story she reads.
Well, that's something I'll discuss with Jean alone.
Yeah. Well, I guess I'll kind of go upstairs and get ready for bed, huh?
All right, fella.
I'm sorry I teased you, Jean. But I still think some of the stories you read are silly.
Good night.
Oh, I guess boys just don't understand, Miss Bess.
Well, Jenny, sweet, I agree with Jerry on one point. Some of the books you've been reading lately are sort of silly. Oh, not this one. I approve of Graustark. But you see, honey, every book you read needn't be a love story.
Well, I don't read them only because they're romantic. They're interesting.
Well, there are other types of books which are very interesting. Now, take biographies, for instance. You might try reading some of them. You'll find they have a lot of substance because, you know the people in them are real, alive, and you know their love stories really happened.
Uh-huh.
I'll be glad to help you select some of your books.
All right, Miss Beth.
It's a good idea to train your tastes in reading, Jeannie, so it'll help develop your character instead of just letting the books you read entertain you.
I see what you mean.
Darling, don't look so serious, honey. Certainly I want you to read some books for entertainment and relaxation. But I also want you to read some of the other kind, too. Sort of mix them up. You know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
Now, isn't it about time for you to go to bed?
I guess so. I'm sorry Jerry and I disturbed you and Captain John.
Oh, it's perfectly all right. I'll explain.
Good night.
Good night, dear.
Still here, Beth.
I'm sorry I had to be away so long, John.
Oh, that's all right. Peace in the family again?
Jerry was teasing Jean about reading love stories.
Oh. Well, if I recall rightly, I used to tease a pretty young aunt of mine about the same thing years and years ago.
I don't believe you.
What's that?
I don't believe that it was years and years and years ago.
Oh, Bess, while you were out, I just happened to remember. There's one thing in particular I want to speak about.
What is it, darling?
Gwen came to see me this afternoon. She wants to bring her son to Glendale to live with me.
She has a son?
Yes. Roy's about 11 years old. Oh. I don't know him at all. After my brother died, I left America and I was away for a long time. But when I did return, I tried to see the boy. Gwen wouldn't permit it. She thought I'd try and get him away from her.
Oh.
Well, I'm naturally interested in the boy. After all, he is my nephew. But I've heard from his teachers that he's very pampered and spoiled, quite a snob. I'm disturbed about him, Beth.
His mother spoiled him?
Yes. She neglected Roy till he was 5. He never knew he had a mother till that time. Now the boy really is a problem.
But does Mrs. Barry realize what she's done, what she's doing to her son?
Oh, I doubt it. That's why her proposition startled me. Why in the world should she want Roy to come and live with me now?
Well, perhaps in spite of what you think of her, John, she feels a boy's got out of hand. And it's quite natural for her to come to you for help.
I'd like to believe that. For the boy's sake, I'd like to help him. I know he must have some stuff in him. It just has to be brought out. And I was thinking, too, Bess. You know a great deal about children. You'd be able to help, that is, if I agreed to take him.
Well, I don't see why you shouldn't try. Roy would have company. Lenny's about his age.
Well, it might be worth a try, but we're forgetting one thing.
What's that, darling?
What about us? When are we going to get married?
That's for you to decide, John.
I want us to be married soon, Beth. How about next month?
Well, no, dear. That's a little too soon. Perhaps around Christmas.
Fine. That's only 3 months away.
Mm-hmm. And that'll give me plenty of time to make arrangements.
But, Bess, how will this affect Roy?
Oh, it needn't affect him at all for the present, John. Maybe 3 months with you will be all he'll need to set him straight. Children of 11 are very impressionable.
Well, as far as the boy himself is concerned, I'd be willing to do it. But his mother, I don't trust Gwen. I never will.
Darling.
Yeah?
I don't know what you have against Gwen Barry, and I don't care to know. But I don't think you should let your opinion of her turn you against her son. That isn't being quite fair. Now, is it, John?
You're right, Beth. I'll tell Gwen that Roy may come and live with me for the next 3 months. But I wonder if I'm not letting myself in for a lot of trouble. Was John wise to accept Bess's sincere and well-meant advice? After all, he knows the type of woman Gwen is. Should John risk his own happiness and Bess's to help Gwen's son? In just a moment, we'll look ahead to tomorrow's chapter of Palm Olive's Hilltop House.
Mother, have you a child who's back in school this fall? If you have, you'll want that child's skin to have special care to make up for those drying hours spent indoors in heated schoolrooms. And the very finest care you could select for your child's skin is frequent cleansing with Palm Olive soap. Remember Dr. Defoe, world-famous doctor to the lovely Dion Quinns, knew just how good Palm Olive was when he selected it for them. Here's what he said. Quote, at the time of the birth of the Dion quintuplets, and for some time afterward, they were bathed in olive oil. When the time arrived for soap and water baths, we selected Palm Olive soap exclusively for bathing these famous babies. Unquote. Now, of course, the reason why Dr. Dafoe selected palm olive soap exclusively was because he decided that only palm olive, made with olive and palm oils, was gentle enough, kind enough, safe enough for the tender skin of the Dion Quinns. And, Mother, your own child needs this same gentle care. So get palm olive soap for all your family. And don't you want to use palm olive for your own complexion, too? Let palm olive help keep your skin soft and fresh and lovely as your baby's.
Tomorrow, John Barry will tell Steve Cortland...
I'll not let Gwen interfere with my life. The moment I learn she's making trouble for either Bess or me, I'll put a stop to it.
Be sure to listen to Palm Olive's Hilltop House tomorrow and every day, Monday through Friday. Daylight saving time ends Sunday, September 24th. If your community has been on standard time right along, this program will reach you 1 hour later, starting next Monday. Otherwise, tune in next week as usual. And now, Palm Olive wishes you a pleasant good day. Your announcer is Frank Gallup. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System. Keep your dials tuned to this same station for another exciting drama, the story of Kay Fairchild, Stepmother. WJSV, Washington.
Can a stepmother successfully raise another woman's children? Colgate Tooth Powder presents the real-life story of Kay Fairchild, a stepmother who tries. Have you ever wondered why we went to the trouble and expense of creating Colgate Tooth Powder, an all-purpose tooth powder that would do more than just clean teeth? Well, the reason is simple. After months of study, asking the public what they wanted a tooth powder to do, scientists discovered that many people wanted it to polish teeth. Others wanted it to guard against unpleasant breath. Still, another group wanted a tooth powder for safe gum massage. So it was decided to make one tooth powder that would do everything. And that's what you get today in Colgate Tooth Powder. A special all-purpose formula that works in all three necessary ways. To brighten teeth, to sweeten breath, and to act as a safe massage for your gums. So now, instead of buying different kinds of tooth powder or paste to do these things, you need only Colgate all-purpose tooth powder. And even one brushing with this remarkable Colgate tooth powder will show you how brilliant and naturally sparkling it leaves your teeth, how sweet it leaves your breath, and how pleasant and safe it is for gum massage. You'll be especially pleased with the fast way Colgate tooth powder brightens your teeth. And then, of course, your smile will radiate new charm. Most amazing, so you can try Colgate tooth powder and prove these claims for yourself, we offer it at bargain prices in a wonderful 1 cent sale. Now just buy one giant size at regular 35 cent price. Then drug and department stores also give you a large size Colgate tooth powder for only 1 cent extra. But now, Colgate tooth powder presents Kay Fairchild, Stepmother. Well, yesterday, after getting that sanitarium clue from Mrs. Jones, Kay and John wondered what Mrs. Clark could be up to. And they were more worried than ever for Anne up at Mrs. Clark's country lodge, believing she is not ill. They were certain, too, that Mrs. Clark is planning to revenge herself upon them. So they decided to make one last appeal to Peg to get her mother away from Mrs. Clark's influence. Well, meantime, Mrs. Clark made plans to visit the strange place where she intends to lure Anne for some diabolical purpose that will somehow ruin Kay and John. Well,
Our scene opens today, shortly after Peg has arrived at the Fairchild house for the talk with her father. Kay and Mother Fairchild are sitting there with John. Listen.
Yes, Dad. Naturally, I'm wondering why you wanted to see me.
Well, obviously, it concerns this whole matter.
I'm sure you understand, Peg, about the danger your mother is in. Being at Mrs. Clark's lodge, thinking she's well when she is actually so ill.
And, Peg, child, you must see that Mrs. Clark is out for no good purpose whatsoever.
Oh, so that's it, huh?
Child, don't say it that way.
Peg, dear, you certainly must see we've bent over backwards trying to be fair.
And to work things out with the least possible amount of hurt to everyone.
I'm sorry, but how can I think that when this trick came up of Dr. Evans telling Mother she was so seriously ill and that she'd have to go to a sanitarium?
Oh, Peg, are you still letting Mrs. Clark convince you that Dr. Evans was wrong and that fake specialist of hers was right about your mother?
Dad, since you and Kay are bringing this all out into the open, isn't it a fact that, well, there might have been a good reason for getting Dr. Evans to tell Mother that?
Oh, what is there to say?
Peg, darling, won't you believe that neither your dad nor I have even thought of trying to keep you children from your mother or driving her away?
Much less to a sanitarium.
Oh, Dad, I'm not blaming you. Peg, I'm really surprised at you.
So am I. I never thought I'd hear you say such a thing.
Nor did I. How you could ever believe Mrs. Clark's charge that Kay would influence me to plot such a thing is beyond me.
Well, to be frank about it, Kay, you do have a way of handling things, and you know it. But isn't it apparent that I've done everything a woman could to be fair in this whole thing?
There's no use talking about it. Agatha Clark has gotten such a hold on Peg and her mother.
She hasn't any hold at all, Dad. It's simply that we see what we see, that's all.
But, dear, you are seeing wrong.
I don't think I am, Granny. And, Kay, if what you say is true, then why did you work it out so that Dad would try to send Mother to her cousin's farm?
I didn't work that out, Peg.
That was my idea from start to finish. Furthermore, it was the most sensible thing to be done at the moment.
I'm sorry, but I can't see it, Dad.
Peg, tell us, why can't you see it?
Yes, I'd give anything to understand that myself.
Isn't it obvious? Dad, you don't love Mother anymore. Surely you're not going to wander around Walnut Grove to interrupt your life, just as Mrs. Clark says, nor is Kay.
Oh, Peg, that's fantastic.
It's so fantastic, it's laughable.
Well, if it's fantastic or laughable, why is it that in everything you've suggested, it's been something to get Mother away from here?
Get your mother away from here?
Yes, sure, Kate tried to get her to that farm. When that didn't go, this thing was worked out with Dr. Evans to send her to a sanitarium.
Peg, I just don't know what to say to you.
There's nothing to say, Dad.
But, Peg, please try and understand that your dad suggested and I agreed that we'd support your mother. And you know we put it straight up to you and Bud without influencing you as to whom you wish to be with. And, Peg, my land youngster, didn't Kay in desperation finally go right into Mrs. Clark's house and tell your mother in front of Mrs. Clark that she wasn't trying to keep Bud or drive her away?
And I made it clear, Peg, that we'd work something else out with Dr. Evans so she could stay around here.
Of course. What more could we do?
Now, Peg, use your head. Stop and ask yourself that.
Oh, good grief. I don't know. But I'm sure, even if all that isn't true, that Mrs. Clark has tried to be a true friend to Mother.
Peg, that Clark woman is no more a friend to your mother
than... Peg, I see that this woman has worked on you so...
Darling, you must at least get your mother away from that woman's country lodge.
Take her to another doctor. Get his opinion.
I'd be more than happy to have you do that, Peg.
Oh, Peg, would you? I don't know if it would be necessary.
Well, it's useless. I give up.
Peg, why don't you listen to your father?
Oh, you must, honey. Your mother's life is in danger. And goodness knows what sort of trouble Mrs. Clark is planning where we're concerned.
Mrs. Clark has insisted she isn't out for any trouble.
She is, and it's obvious as anything could be.
Peg, you're making a bad mistake. There's something terrible behind all this.
Now, that's silly, Kay. I don't know what's gotten into you, child.
Grandma, what do you expect me to do or say? Do you want me to turn against my own mother for a stepmother?
Peg, I think you've said enough.
Well, Dad, I think enough's been said all around. If you don't mind, I'm going back to Mrs. Clark. Goodbye.
Well, all right.
I never thought I'd see Peg act like that.
Neither did I.
Well, the situation just gets worse and worse.
And there's just one hope left now.
Yes, Mrs. Jones. If Mrs. Jones can only get some information that will enable us to clear up this whole situation before Mrs. Clark does move.
Or something happens with Anne.
Yes, but it appears to be even too late for that. Because Mrs. Clark is wasting no time now in carrying out her scheme for using Anne to ruin Kay and John. Because right now, we find her with Carl up at that mysterious place she's arranged to visit. Listen.
I am delighted that you like our place, Mrs. Clark.
Very attractive, Mr. Burdoff, for such a different kind of sanitarium.
Thank you.
Looks like a hotel.
Making it very ideal for your little plan, madam.
Perfect, Carl. Perfect.
You understand, I am sure. The outside appearance is to quiet the fears of our, inmates, is a rather unfitting word, huh?
Guests, perhaps, would be better.
Ah, yes. Guests. Or visitors.
Well, it looks all right. But you're sure, Mr. Burdoff, that I can depend upon you?
Mrs. Clark, for the proper fee, which, of course, we have agreed on, I am not only dependable, but I will assist you in every possible manner. Be assured.
And how can I be sure of that, my friend?
Do you not realize that I will be involving myself in this matter as much as you are?
Yes, he is right about that, madame.
Of course. Now think for a moment. I will take this woman when she arrives, hold her, swear that this Mrs. Fairchild and her husband, the mayor, gave me instructions to keep her here when she arrives.
That's true. You will be involved as much as I will.
Which is precisely why my fees are rather exorbitant.
I would say it is satisfactory, madame.
Yes, I think it is.
Excellent, excellent. Then what is your plan?
This may all take a few days to carry out.
Then you will phone this Anne Fairchild, who I understand is at your lodge not far from here?
Exactly. Now, follow me closely. I'll be posing as the new wife of this Mayor Fairchild of Walnut Grove.
To be sure, the lady you mentioned.
Yes. And I'm going to ask Anne to meet me here at this hotel for a general discussion of the entire situation I mentioned to you.
You understood all of that, Mr. Burnham?
Perfectly, Mr. Carl. And the story is that Mayor Fairchild and his second wife are trying to get rid of this woman by secretly luring her to such a place as this.
That is the idea, my friend.
Now, when she gets here, you are to hold her.
Hold her. Oh, yes. And she'll be told that this is a hotel?
Only so she won't be suspicious when I phone her. And when she arrives, put her in a room. Soon she will begin to complain, of course.
They all do.
And then you are to tell her that this former husband of hers and his new wife arranged all this and instructed you to hold her.
All the while treating her as though something was wrong up here.
Yes, but remember, she has a bad heart condition.
No rough treatment. Be very careful of that.
I quite understand. And eventually, when the authorities arrive to get her out.
You are to shrug your shoulders, say you have no idea. You were merely following the instructions of this Mayor Fairchild and his wife, believing there was something wrong with this woman. Get it, Mr. Burdoff?
Perfectly. And you will leave those pictures of this mayor and his new wife, so I can identify them should they show up here later on.
I will leave them with the gentleman, madame.
Good. Now, just one more thing. And this is very, very important. When this Anne Fairchild gets here, she'll plead with you to get in touch with me. You see?
And should I, or should I not?
Only when I phone you. Then you finally make it appear that you are giving in and suggest that you will forward to me a letter, which this Anne is to write.
Clever. Very clever. And in that letter, she is to charge
that this ex-husband of hers and his new wife lured her here. Is that clear?
Very clear. Consider it done, Mrs. Clark.
Well, then that is about all, is it not, madame?
I think so. now to carry out everything smoothly. And will I have what I've been working for so long? Will I, Carl?
There is not even a faint suspicion about it now, or any question, madame. Kay and John Fairchild will never live this down.
So that's Mrs. Clark's scheme. To lure Anne to this place, disguising her voice as Kay. And then Mr. Burdoff is to get Anne to write a letter saying that Kay and John are responsible. Well, what can Kay do to protect her family from this vicious woman? Be sure to hear what happens at this same time tomorrow when Mrs. Jones makes a discovery that may help. And one thing more. Daylight saving time ends this week. So beginning Monday, Stepmother will be heard at 10:45 a.m. Eastern Standard Time and 9:45 Central Standard Time. Now, if you've had trouble finding the right tooth powder to use, do as thousands are doing and start today using the amazing Colgate All-Purpose Tooth Powder. We urge you to do this at once because right now, drug and department stores everywhere offer Colgate tooth powder in a marvelous one-cent sale that will save you a lot of money. Really, it's the chance of a lifetime to stock up on this astonishing new tooth powder at bargain prices. So don't miss this sensational offer. What's more, you'll be glad you tried Colgate All-Purpose Tooth Powder when you discover that it not only brightens your teeth, but also sweetens your breath and is safe for gum massage. So don't miss our thrilling one-cent sale on this remarkable Colgate Tooth Powder. Just go to drug or department stores, buy one giant-sized can at regular 35-cent price, then pay just 1 cent extra, and your dealer will also give you the large-sized Colgate Tooth Powder. Now get your Colgate tooth powder for only 1 cent today before limited supply is gone. Now that's what thousands are doing to win naturally sparkling teeth and a more attractive smile. And remember, Colgate tooth powder will present Stepmother again tomorrow, same station, same time. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.
WLOVA, Bulova Watch Time. Here's a distinguished timepiece, the 21-jewel Bulova President in the charmant color of natural gold. Curved, streamlined, an exceptional value. WJSV, Washington.